This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. From time to time, we were going to be posting quick audio blog or video blog updates about things that are going on, answers to certain email questions, etc. I recently read another book by Anti-Pope Benedict XVI. There are numerous heresies in the book. It's not quite as heretical as his previous book. That's not surprising, considering that was one of the most heretical books that's probably been written by any person who claims to be Catholic. In this new book that I read, which will probably be exposed in an article or video coming up soon, among other things, he says that a fact recounted in the Gospel can be considered to have derived from a pre-Christian myth. He also says that the feasts of the Old Testament had their root in pagan nature religions, among other things. So that is something that might be coming out. Another thing that was mentioned in our last radio discussion is this long article that should be coming out soon in refutation of a certain non-Sedevacantist whose lies and errors and heresies we've already thoroughly exposed, but there are some new points that need to be made. And in this long article that I've been working on, I'm just stunned by the amount of errors, lies, contradictions, and heresies that are contained in this presentation that I'm going to be exposing. I go page by page and I expose the errors, lies, heresies, and blatant contradictions that are contained on every single page, and frequently it's more than one on a page. It's simply amazing. So that's something that will hopefully be coming soon. Another thing that I wanted to mention is that we get a lot of emails from people who complain that we don't allow comments on our videos. In almost every case, the person who is making this complaint is either an atheist, an anti-Catholic, person who doesn't believe in Jesus or doesn't believe in the Bible. And I think it's indicative of how people are not searching for the truth, but they're searching for what other people have to say. They want to see what everyone else has to say, rather than focusing in on the presentation and the facts that are being presented and evaluating whether those facts conform to the truth. They need reassurances from others. It's an example of the problem that we have. We don't have truth seekers and people who are looking for God. They're looking for man. In line with this, we recently received an email from a woman named Catherine, and it's a follow-up email to something we addressed on our website in our e-exchanges section. And in Catherine's initial email, which we posted on our website and we posted our response to it, she was complaining about our section on John Paul II. She had apparently reviewed some of our article on the heresies of anti-Pope John Paul II, and she was specifically addressing his teaching in his general audience December 27, 1978, in which John Paul II said, quote, "The whole of humanity is redeemed, saved, ennobled to the extent of participating in divine life by means of grace," end quote. And she actually argues that this does not teach that all men are saved or all men have the state of grace. She says, quote, "You fail to recognize the words to the extent, which means that to the extent that any person participates in divine life. This is clearly not the same as saying every person participates in divine life," end quote. In the e-exchanges, we responded to and refuted her false assertion. His statement clearly means that every person has the divine life. In context, he's saying that the whole of humanity, quote, one, is redeemed, two, is saved, and three, is ennobled, meaning made noble. That's what ennobled means. How? To the extent of participating in divine life. So in this context, the words "to the extent" mean how or to what degree John Paul II believes the whole of humanity has been ennobled or made noble. That means, he's saying, the whole of humanity has been made noble, so much so, to the extent that they all participate in the state of grace or the divine life. It's quite clear, unless you don't read very well or are dishonest. And we supplemented the point by showing that John Paul II teaches universal salvation all over the place. We quote Redemptor Hominis, Redemptoris Missio, Santissimus Annus, in which he teaches that the whole of humanity is united with Christ forever. And since hell is eternal separation from God, to say that Christ unites himself with each man forever, that means all men are saved. And in Redemptor Hominis, he also says that all men have achieved the state of divine adoption, meaning the state of grace. So this statement here, which is obvious in itself, is simply consistent with his teaching. And so Catherine's original email was very arrogant. However, when she read our refutation of her and the supplemental facts we provided, she wasn't quite as arrogant when she wrote back. She was still resisting the point and the truth, but she had been humbled a little bit by the facts. But she came back by saying that she's consulted her well-respected friends, and her well-respected friends all think that he's not saying that all men have the divine life. And again, this is another example of a woman who's not searching for the truth. She doesn't have real conviction. She's a lady who's looking for what other people have to say. And the reason those other people you respect are not willing to admit that he teaches that all men have the divine life is because they don't have faith and they're not honest. It would require them to conclude that John Paul II is evil, and they're not willing to make that determination. And because they don't have the faith to recognize that he's evil, they simply refuse to believe what he actually says, even though it's clear. So many souls are deceived in that way. But their well-respected friends will not be there to help them when they go before the judgment seat of Jesus Christ and are condemned to eternal hellfire for having rejected the truth and for having accepted heretics. Something else we received recently, actually today, is an email about our post concerning circumcision and the Council of Florence. Yesterday, we posted an e-exchange about an error that certain radical schismatics make about the Council of Florence. On that point, we received an email. Hi, I have been following your website for about 3 years, and it has really enlightened me. We were truly in the dark. Thanks for all you do. I read your current email on circumcision and was wondering if my husband and I committed a grave sin for having our two sons circumcised. We thought that is what we were supposed to do. And she goes on. And the answer to the question is that if you had them circumcised out of some belief that you were religiously obligated to do so, then that was a mortal sin and needs to be confessed. If someone has a cutting done that corresponds to what people call circumcision, and that is done purely for medical or perceived health reasons, then that is not a mortal sin because it's not observing the ritual of circumcision as it is defined by the Council of Florence. That's the distinction. If it's done for purely medical or health reasons, it's not a mortal sin. It's not, in fact, observing, quote, circumcision. It's simply having a cutting done that corresponds to that Old Testament ritual. But if people do it because they have a belief that they are religiously obligated in some way to do so, then that is condemned. That is forbidden. And that would need to be confessed. Another thing that's been in the news recently is how various people want Obama to show his long-form birth certificate, and various state legislatures are advancing bills that require candidates for office to produce proof that they are natural-born citizens or citizens. And it's so interesting because those who are proponents of such legislation, that one must prove he is a citizen or a natural-born citizen to run for office, are being blasted and actually demonized in many circles of the mainstream press. And when they interview these people, they try to get them to withdraw the effort, and they grill them over their motivations. And I think this is another example of how darkness is light and light is darkness, and how for most of the world, truth is a lie and lie is truth. Because how could anyone be opposed to the concept of proving that you fulfill the requirements set forth in the Constitution for holding a political office? Why would anyone be opposed to that concept? Obviously, they shouldn't be. Yet the people who are simply trying to make sure that people who run for office are constitutionally eligible to hold those offices are being persecuted in a certain sense. And I think it's an example of how the world labors under a deception. And so those were the updates. Until next time, goodbye.